In this episode, entitled Don't Be Weird, Sibsibanda interviews Brandon Pascal, a venture and innovation consultant in the agri-tech space. For him, the awareness that everyone he meets is an image bearer of God has been a fruitful guideline in his work with entrepreneurs. His advice? Engage with people humbly, do your job excellently, and trust God with the rest.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique contexts on the African continent.
Welcome to the Monday Christian Podcast, where we're exploring how the biblical narrative shapes our daily business practice. The podcast is structured as a set of mini-series dealing with different topics, and after each one, we invite a business leader to share insights from their own experience. And here to reflect on the topic of common grace is venture and innovation consultant, Brandon Pascal. Brandon, a warm welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for taking the time to be here.
Absolute privilege, Sib. I've been following the podcast for the last few weeks, and this is actually my first podcast, so I'm really excited just to be here in this conversation.
We have a lot to talk about, but before we start, would you please tell us a bit about yourself and your business journey?
So I'm obviously foreign. So I moved to South Africa in 2004, 18 years ago, as a missionary on campus up in Joburg in Pretoria, and did that for 7 years and then did an MBA, turned 30, and I just wanted to stay in South Africa. And this whole business thing was pretty exciting. So I jumped into a tech company there for a few years, did some other ventures and things around Gauteng. And then in 2015, my wife and I moved down to Stellenbosch and I joined the Stellenbosch Launch Lab there as kind of the 2IC. And in my 7 years there, we were able to build what others called Africa's number one incubator, a university incubator. From 2017 to 2020, we had that status. And just really excited that we were able to bring that awareness to the South African tech ecosystem with what we're doing with startups and innovation and trying to build that kind of tech economy down here. And now I'm a venture and innovation consultant freelancing with a few different things now and a lot of work in the agri-tech space.
Great. Well, looking forward to gleaning some wisdom from you. So by way of reminder, just because the topic of common grace is one that perhaps some people are not overly familiar with, just by way of reminder and as a launchpad for our conversation, theologians basically break down common grace into three categories. So the first is the restraining of sin and withholding of judgment, because the world has sinned, God should judge and judge immediately, but he doesn't. He's withholding that judgment. The second is the blessing of the wicked. And then the third is the ability of sinners to do good. And so I really want us in the time that we have to focus mostly on those last two. So the blessing of the wicked, maybe let's start with that one, because I'm sure that's something that all of our listeners are very familiar with. And I'm going to ask you to reflect on your own business journey and think through times where you've experienced this and, more importantly, how you've processed that.
My first job after I left full-time vocational ministry, where I was paid to do ministry stuff and not doing ministry in other areas, I was with a tech company in Joburg, and I was brought in as the first business hire in a team of all technical people. And into the exco with the three directors. And none of them would have said that they were Christian, and they were living lifestyles that, like, not evil, but I wouldn't say, hey, they must be an elder of a church because their life looks as such. And they were living with girlfriends, all of them. And the way we conducted ourselves was very arrogant in the office. And ourselves, I was actually pulled into that culture because that was, you know, 20 people. You sometimes do things that shouldn't be saying and doing because that's the water that you swim in. The way we spoke about our customers was particularly degrading to them. And it was only in the office, not in meetings. And after a few months, we were barely paying salaries. So the directors forewent salaries for a few months so they could pay the rest of the team because they had equity. And after that, the directors pulled me into some strategy and culture shifts in the business there. And then over several months, we changed the way we were talking about our customers in the office with the team that we had and the way we treated them in meetings and the way the directors viewed them. There was a real heart change in that. And they didn't get saved. They were still living with girlfriends and whatever. But the way they conducted their business significantly shifted. And within 2 years, we were acquired by a large UK company. They didn't get saved in the process. I did end up doing one of their weddings, officiating that, which was great fun. So there was obviously some impact there, but no one gave their life to the Lord. But the business prospered, and I joined. We were 15, quickly went to 20. When I left, we were about 40 people. Now, 7 years on, they're more than 200. And then they're sending people all over the world, but still none of the directors have been saved. There's another business I was working with here at the Launch Lab in Stellenbosch, where same thing. So I'm working in an incubator, and a company comes in, and I'm working with the CEO, and he had two employees, and he was not saved at that point. And then we're just doing strategy and helping them make connections for their business. And then they get a 15 million rand investment from a large company, and then they got another one a couple of years later. And in that journey, he actually becomes a Christian. And at the time, he was raising 15 million rand and growing his revenue. He was not saved and wicked. Like he wasn't honoring Jesus with his life. He eventually did. And that's just an interesting contrast between one of them ends up in salvation and the other does not. But they were both, when they were flourishing temporarily in their business, were not walking with the Lord.
Yeah. Now let's just break that down a bit, because the script, I guess, that maybe some of us are living off is, I believe in Jesus, I read the Bible, I do what God tells me to do, and God is pleased, and so God blesses me and causes me to flourish, right? Now, that breaks down when you have people who are doing none of those things. They don't believe in Jesus. They care nothing for his word or his purposes, and yet they apparently flourish. And I say apparently, but in very real terms, they get great deals. The bank accounts are overflowing. So how did you process that? Maybe even then, but also reflecting on it now.
Well, in those two instances, I had a job to do. I had a contract, and I was put in a business and an organization, and I had certain things I had to deliver on, and I delivered on those. The main thing with the tech company was be the project manager and manage 12 projects at a time, which was maybe a little overkill, and help us with, you have an MBA, you understand industrial psychology, help us with strategy and our culture and how we talk about things. And I did that, and apparently well, because it turned things around. And the same with the Launch Lab company, my job was to do those things. And what happens with the outcome of that, it's not up to me, that's up to God. I have a job to do.
Reminds me of Joseph in Pharaoh's house, doesn't it? Right? So he's a believer, he's a man of God, he's in a pagan society, and yet he recognizes what his role is. And that brings up several questions, I guess. First is the one that's expressed, and we touched on this in the podcast, is the disillusionment that can come from this reality. So in Jeremiah 12, we have Jeremiah asking God, but why do the wicked prosper? And the psalmist in Psalm 73 saying, well, he's seeing all of this taking place, and he's asking himself, he almost concludes, in vain have I kept my hands clean, right? And so as Christians in business, we are looking, and you're looking around and you're seeing people who don't believe in Jesus, people who are not honoring God, prospering. And you can almost get to that point where you think, well, what's the point then? Why am I living justly? Why am I loving mercy? Why am I walking humbly with God? Why am I obeying God's precepts when those who are showing blatant disregard for all of these things seem to be prospering?
Let me give you one personal story where something bad happened and it wasn't made right. And then maybe like a biblical angle and how I anchor myself in that experience. I was the 2IC in a venture I was helping lead, and it was quite successful, myself and the CEO, and the venture was doing well. And then the CEO was grooming me to take over from him. And then he resigned and immigrated, and I was interim CEO for 6 months. And I was, this is obvious, I'm going to take it over. And the others in the industry we were working in, it's like, Brandon's the obvious choice. Why would they appoint someone else? Well, they didn't appoint me. They appointed someone else. And at the time, everyone in the team was actually a believer somehow. We didn't do it on purpose. It just ended up being what was there. But no one on the board was a believer. And then they appointed someone else. And then, so he was not a believer that came in and took over the company. And it did not make sense to me at all. Like, we're all Christians. Why would you, something having so much impact and me being a good fit for this role, and that's part of the issue. It's me being such a fit for the role, which there's my own pride I had to deal with in that whole process. And I don't get the job and I move on somewhere else and the person is still leading the company and it's not doing well. But then at the same time, God had to do some business with my own heart and my own pride in my professional journey. Also, I'm doing things now that I would not have been able to do if I had stayed there. And there was a looking forward that God had that I don't have his future sight. Like, this is my thing. And I'm actually in a much more exciting space now. I'm getting paid less than I was, but what I'm doing is much more fruitful, it feels like to me. So it's in a much more exciting space. And I think the biblical anchor for myself in that is in Ezekiel 16, he talks about, you know, there's a coming siege to Jerusalem and I'm going to send you off into some other place. And the reason he gives is because you had pride, excess of food and prosperous ease, and you did not aid the poor and needy. And then what happens is Babylon comes and lays siege and then carries them off to Babylon. That was a very rich and successful empire at the time. So financially and resource-wise, poor was their soul. And the reason he moved them there is because they were not being the light that they should have been to the rest of the world. So it's also understanding that poor and needy is not financially poor, it's spiritually poor. And being able to understand God has a better view of my future. He's more concerned about my future than I am. He's more concerned about the people I serve than I am. So I can actually just trust him when bad things like that happen.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of Colossians 3, where Paul talks about in whatever you do, work wholeheartedly, knowing you're working for the Lord and not for men. And that's so important within those contexts where we find ourselves, I guess, in those Joseph situations where we're in Potiphar's house and working with or partnering with people who don't believe. But I want to transition at that point then to that second thing I said I wanted us to talk about, which is the ability of sinners to do good, the ability of those who don't believe in Jesus to actually help to bring about blessing for others. Because in all of the contexts you've mentioned, even though the leaders of the business weren't Christians, yet the work that they were doing was not only providing for their employees, but they were part of a value chain as well in the economy that was bringing blessing and flourishing to society. And so we have to get our heads around that as well, correct?
So the tech company in Joburg that I worked with that had that culture and strategy turnaround, I learned so much about managing people there from them in a good way. They didn't treat anyone in the team badly. Besides the way that we spoke about customers, the culture was actually really rich. And I've taken a lot of that and applied it in all of the other ventures that I have because I learned from them how to do that. And even going into sales meetings and expanding revenue with certain customers, I took a lot of notes. Those were very formative years with that. And we still keep in touch from here and there. They've come and spoken at events that I've been managing here. I learned a lot from them, just good business practices.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So we can see from that there is God gives to people, whether they believe in him or not. And so that means that as believers, we can actually learn from non-believers in many ways. But can you share some practical wisdom for working and partnering with non-Christians in the marketplace? Because surely there must be some pitfalls and just things to look out for.
There's something that you and Paul often talk about on these podcasts I've been listening to, and a way that he leads his business that I completely anchor on is like acknowledging Genesis 1:28 was before the fall and there would have been business then.
Yeah.
And how I conduct myself in business should look like that, because ultimately we're trying. Our prayer is on earth as it is in heaven. And how am I leading my business in that kind of way? And not just the people in my team, but how do I interact with customers and partners and suppliers and things like that? And understanding that everyone is an image bearer of God.
Yeah.
I just happen to be saved. I happen to actually trust in Jesus. And one day, hopefully, everyone I interact with will also trust in Jesus. It doesn't make them less of an image bearer now than it does then. And they could be a future brother. They're at least a current image bearer brother. They could be a future saved brother in the household of God with me. Having that right view of an image bearer and the value that they carry is incredibly important for Christians in business.
Right. But there must be a line, surely, in working with people of different faiths for the common good. Mm. There must be a line or lines that at some point as Christians we have to draw and say, this I cannot be involved in. Can you talk to us about some of those situations, maybe things that you've encountered in your own journey?
In one of the ventures I was in, there was a person illegally employed that was foreign. So you need a work permit to work in South Africa. And sometimes it takes a long time to get that from Home Affairs as two foreigners, you know, that have worked here in South Africa. But you jump through the hoops and you tick the boxes and you go through the process because that is the law. And because of my knowledge of being a foreigner and going through that, I understand what it takes to get legal and the consequences for directors of businesses that employ illegal people. Because it's more of a risk to the directors than it is the employee, actually. So I raise the issue with the directors of the company and say, look, this is a senior person. And the reality is you think you've ticked the boxes, but I know you haven't ticked the boxes. The consequences are X. And like you need to do something. Then I hand it to them because they are the directors. And I had to get legal counsel because I was an observer to the board. And I'm a certified director in the Institute of Directors in South Africa. So there are some things that could expose me. So I had to get legal counsel on how to approach it and then met with a board member and said, this is what you're facing. You need to deal with this. And then they dealt with it. And I don't know how they dealt with it, but they dealt with it and they made their decisions. And then I made sure that I was protected by legal precedent in the way, however that works.
And that's good because what we're not saying is that as Christians in business, we should just be naive and say, well, Lord, I'm partnering with fellow image bearers for the common good. So, hey ho, but that you actually need to be sensible and wise. And sometimes, as you say, seek legal counsel. Mm. But the reality is that sometimes when you do draw that line, there are real world consequences, right?
And so in that instance, I didn't leave because of that instance, but I moved on and, you know, I've been financially secure since then. Even now in my freelancing life, I'm financially secure. We have a family member that there was something much more illegal that they were facing in a company that our family member was in. I'm trying to, you know, protect some names here. But he saw something, he raised it to the managing director. And then after that, for several months, he was verbally abused and there were interesting things happening with job description and performance reviews and lots of documents just flying around everywhere. And besides the verbal abuse that he was getting, there was also just unsettling things happening. And it's like, what did he discover in the business that led to all of this? And it seemed to be more than he actually anticipated. So he eventually resigned. And then he hasn't been able to land with financial security. And it's been more than 2 years. So he's a godly man, elder in his church, has two kids and a wife, all follow the Lord. And I don't have kids. I'm financially secure. He has kids. He's not financially secure. What's the difference between the two of us there? And I don't have an answer for that. Sometimes it's just the Lord has other things because he has an eternal view.
Brendan, I'd like to land this by maybe looking at the danger. So we've spoken about how actually as Christians, we shouldn't be narrow-minded in terms of, oh, I'll only work with a Christian or only partner with Christians, etc. In working with the people that God has placed in our lives for the common good, for the flourishing of society, etc., there are dangers associated with working closely with people who don't share our faith. I can think of in the Old Testament, the theme of idolatry was huge. And so learning from people, but not taking on their idols, I'd say is one of the big, big challenges for Christians in business, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. The tech company in Joburg, I had to challenge the way we were viewing customers and talking about them because I felt convicted. Also, since we've moved to Stellenbosch, so it's not me lived, but it's what I've observed. So you know, my wife is Carrie. She is helping lead the Suwannee thing and part of Murgon. And when we moved down, some of the directors of Murgon lived in the residential area where a lot of other investment professionals live. And because it's easier to make deals when you bri with people. And it's been great to invest in companies that are also contributing to Suwannee and the broader Murgon Foundation impact that they're having. But what was really interesting about that is everyone in those areas drives, you know, Porsche SUVs and BMWs and Mercedes. Not that those are inherently evil if you drive them. But what was interesting to watch is they were still driving old Toyota 100,000 kilometer SUVs and like a Ford van, like a big mommy wagon, some people call it. But like it's a large vehicle that isn't the sexiest thing to drive around these rich residential areas. And I was really impressed with the way they resisted the temptation to just live like everyone else that was of their status in this place, because they did certain things that needed to get in line. And then they also did other things that were against that culture. And I was really impressed with some of those decisions and the thoughtfulness with which they went about living their lives.
Yeah, such a good example. And just to be clear, we're not saying that there's inherent virtue in driving an old Toyota,
right?
But that as Christians, we always do need to be careful to not get sucked into the idols of the society that we are part of, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need to walk with God and live your life.
Yeah.
And walk with God faithfully and listen to the Holy Spirit when he convicts you about things, because he always is. And sometimes we just ignore that gut feeling, which is actually the Holy Spirit.
Fantastic. Well, Brandon, we have to wrap it up there. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your wisdom and experience with us. And really trust that God will continue to bless the work of your hands.
Awesome. Thanks. Absolute pleasure. And I look forward to the rest of these podcasts. These have been awesome.
Fantastic. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. Ziwani is a Mergon initiative. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.